it was sunset and we were shooting, and we said, I'm not even kidding, we're like, imagine if these got in vogue. And then when we went back to the car to pack all our stuff up, we had an email from Edwina, which is editor-in-chief of Vogue. Never heard of her in our life. And that happened literally half an hour after we said that. Then when we went to the meeting with Edwina that had nothing to do with the photo shoot, we were with like all her assistants and stuff. And we showed the photos that we took on the day to these girls. And then they said, holy shit, Edwina needs to see these. And as we're walking back to the car, because Edwina was in a meeting, we had a DM off Edwina in capital saying, oh my God, these are amazing. We're going to print.
Welcome to this In Conversation episode of Shameless with the very talented men behind the Inspired Unemployed. You've likely seen Matt Ford and Jack Steele dancing and jumping and laughing across your social media news feeds as the two comedic brains behind the juggernaut that is the Inspired Unemployed. With nearly 600,000 followers on TikTok and nearly 800,000 on Instagram, in the last year or so, Matt and Jack have gone from relative obscurity to an internationally recognized duo loved for their ability to create cleverly crafted skits, often in under 60 seconds. So what's it been like for these two self-proclaimed battlers and former tradies who, in 12 months, have gone from working on suburban job sites to starring on the cover of GQ and fronting campaigns for Fendi, Louis Vuitton, and The Iconic? And how do they keep having fun when your side hustle becomes your full-time job? We had an absolute blast chatting to these two about each other, about their work, and how they created one of the most successful brands of 2020. Here is Matt and Jack from The Inspired Unemployed.
The Inspired Unemployed boys, Jack and Matt, welcome to Shameless in Conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Good to be on here.
Been listening to you guys a lot lately, actually.
Oh, that sounds like a lie.
I don't believe you for a second.
We actually have. On the way up, you know, a quick little 1 minute before we got bored.
Yeah.
It's great. Great podcast.
Well, we're glad to have had you for that single minute. We are very flattered, and we will have thousands of listeners who will be very, very stoked that you are on the podcast today. So what we wanted to start with is we actually wanted to address a little bit of a conspiracy that we were doing our digging the last couple of days. And the most Googled question about the two of you is how old you are. And in a recent interview, you both said you were 26. But then we listened to an interview that you did in January, and one of you said you were 25 and one of you said you were 24. And now we're just very confused.
I think in the paper the other day, I was 27, you were 28.
Oh, yeah.
Who knows? It's a mystery. I don't think anyone knows. I don't even know.
Someone actually came up to us yesterday. We're playing lawn bowls, and they're like, we need to know how old you are. I don't know why people want to know that.
Well, boys, the real question is, why are you so secretive? Just give us your age.
What's the bet they're like 35, Michelle?
No, I'm 34 and he's 36.
No, I just think it's been typos the whole time. I'm 25 and Jeff's 26.
26, yeah.
I think what's interesting about the two of you is obviously everyone knows you as a duo as the Inspired Unemployed, but I guess the first thing they wanted to get a sense of is how you're both different. Like, how would you describe yourself as different to each other? I mean, Jack, I'll start with you. How is Matt different to you?
That's a good question. Probably because he's everything's happy.
We're talking about this other day. We're so the same, but we're so yin and yang at the same time.
Yeah, so similar. I just think maybe I'm more of a serious type personality, more deep, maybe a bit more deep in a sense. Mm. And then Falcon's more real lighthearted and kind of easygoing. But in other traits, we're literally the same person.
Mm.
But in some internal ways, yeah, we're very different, sort of.
Yeah.
Do you think that's kind of central to your success, though? Like, do you think that you kind of need to have both that serious side and that frivolous side to make things work?
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
I think that's why it works so well, because we are.
It wouldn't work without it. If we're the same, it wouldn't work. And it's hard because we spend every day together, so it's hard not to mold into the same person. You really want to keep that difference there, because otherwise, but I don't know, it works fine at the moment.
Yeah.
I think, obviously, the story with you guys is that you met in high school and you became best friends. Was it in year 7? Talk to us about the formation of that friendship.
Yeah, so we met, I was in year 7, he was a year above in year 8, and we met, I always bring back to this school snow trip. We did a school snow trip, and everyone used to go to school real early and line up to put their name down for the school snow trip. And I think I met him in the line there.
In the morning.
Yeah, I can't remember. And then we became friends and were close, but we weren't that close. We were friends, but hung out here and there. And then it wasn't until after school when we started going to, like, festivals together. That's
where the real bonding happens.
You know, and you're 2 a.m.ers and you're just like, you're my brother. And then, yeah, so probably when we were like, I was maybe 17 and you were, or 16, 17.
Yeah, 16, 17 probably.
That's when we got real tight. And then our, like, crew of mates, kind of, that's where we all really, like, yeah, got tight, like the stragglers that weren't that close left. And then, yeah, we got real close. Yeah. There's a group of about 10 of us that are just super close. But
and,
yeah,
it's, and we're all different. But so there's, like, most of our best friends, the guys we're living with now, so you, like, Big Twist, you're probably familiar with, and Bill, and me and Falcon all have sisters, only two siblings, one sibling, and it's a sister 2 years older than us, all of us. It's so weird. We're all best friends. Oh, yeah, it's weird. After school festivals is pretty much how we met. And
yeah. You both became tradies after school. Did you guys enjoy being in that line of work? Did you ever think, like, yes, this is it for me? Or was the entertainment industry always something on the horizon that you wanted to aspire towards?
Well, I left halfway through year 11 and I went and worked for, like, an online surfboard site. So I didn't start at my trade. So I worked there for a couple of years and then I went traveling and I came back and then fell into...
You were just cruising.
Yeah, I was just cruising. I didn't want to be a tradie because my dad was a bricklayer and I seen how hard it was and just how his back was always fucked or his shoulders, whatever. And I was like, I don't want to do that for the rest of my life. I don't want to do that at all. And then, but I kind of fell into it because there's not many jobs where we're from. It's either everyone's a tradie or a teacher. So I fell into it, but I didn't want to do my apprenticeship because then you're locked in. So I was just trying to, like, just work, make money, and then, like, travel, this and that. And then I was actually just about to start my apprenticeship because I was, like, getting on. I was, like, 23 or 4. And everyone was like, you need to do an apprenticeship now or you're going to be screwed. You'll be, like, 30 and still labouring. I'm like, fuck, all right, I'll do it. And then Jack called me one arvo and he's like, let's go to Europe. I was like, no, I can't travel. Like, I've got to actually say no for once and do something, like, serious for my life. And he's like, no, we're going. We'll work towards something we want to do for the rest of our lives. This and that, and then I was like, all right, one more trip, let's just do it. Yeah. Give one more last crack.
And then, I remember that perfectly when I called him. I was skating up and down the footpath after I got home from a trip somewhere. I think I was in New Zealand, and I've been home for a month or two. I was going to do one last trip to kind of, but I wanted to, yeah, go somewhere with life, you know, instead of my trade, because I also did not like it at all. And then I remember speaking to him on the phone, and he's like, nah, not doing it, can't do it. I've got to settle down. I've got to knuckle into something, get my apprenticeship. And I was like, what do you mean? Blah, blah, blah. And then hung up. Then I'm not joking. I can 10 minutes later, he called me. He's like, let's do it. Let's go. And it was just, yeah, it was obviously something planned for it. But I was a tradie for about 10 years, 9 years, since I was 16 or something. Yeah.
When you say you gave Matt the phone call saying, like, let's do something that we want to do for the rest of our lives, did you actually mean let's actually start creating content and start creating videos? Like, is that what you meant? Is that the kind of thing that you actually wanted to do?
No. I mean, yeah, we were going to do that, but we had no clue in the whole world you can make money from Instagram. We were just tradies that knew nothing about that life. And we kind of wanted to – we're over there. It's pretty funny. We're planning to, like, start a superfood, like, Asahi health bar, and then like,
just anything.
Like, emailing the council at Byron Bay, I'm pretty sure, saying, like, can we get permits to, like, work, like, set up a shipping container on this field, blah, blah, blah. I don't know what we're thinking.
We just wanted to set up, like,
anything about hospitality or anything. Yeah. We just wanted to start something. But then we just wanted to make videos on the side. But, yeah, so we just started doing that. That's what we're really passionate about. And we just kept going. Because Falcon made videos, and I did as well, but he made them heaps at home while I was snowboarding, like, in the years. And we also made videos on the one-off, you know, every couple of months. But then we're like, let's go overseas and just start doing it heavily.
Yeah, just because we enjoyed doing it. We didn't really think, you know, this was going to come out of it at all.
Yeah,
had no idea. We thought we'd just have some fun with it and see what happens. And then, yeah.
Yeah.
I want to know, when did you guys realize you had such good observation skills? Because to be in the industry you're in and be making the kind of content you make, you have to be really watching people and understanding how people work and what's funny about being human. Did you guys notice that was a skill you both had, being able to kind of make light of observing the world?
Not really.
Not really.
Not at all.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Definitely not. I think we just, I don't know, I guess we just started making, we didn't even know we're funny, honestly. Like, we still don't think we're funny. We watch, we edit things and we don't laugh sometimes. And we're just like, who knows how this is going to go. But I think at the time we just tried to make as much content, and but that was funny for us. We didn't really care at the start what people thought, I don't think. Still don't really in a way, but relatable things and just what was funny and stupid to us, we just started pumping out so much of that content. And then I guess it just kind of shaped from there. I couldn't even edit videos. I could, but basic, and he kind of was a bit better than me at editing. We were both so bad, couldn't act, still can't act, but like, you know, just were horrible, and I guess just got better.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Seriously. I still feel like we don't even know what we're doing. At all.
We don't even know what. We show our housemates when we edit a video, because we have so much tunnel vision, we've been editing it for a day or whatever. We don't even know what it looks like anymore. I haven't laughed once while editing it. And the housemates are so used to it, they don't even laugh. They're just like, yeah, that's a good one. Or, that, yeah, that's shit.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Then if it's a good one, you're like, oh, we're on here, boys. Yeah. Pretty much.
But then there's times like, where we,
yeah, all, you know, it's a good one.
Yeah, and you're all laughing. And,
yeah.
Like that, sure, the one we did just recently, the Nickelback one, I couldn't stop watching. I was cacking just because everyone just looked so funny. And
Yeah, the ones you laugh at when you're making, you know they're going to be good.
Yeah.
Do you think that working like as tradies and actually kind of having a life before you went into this probably helped your comedy a little bit because you were around the very people that you're trying to target now with your comedy?
I think so.
Yeah, probably.
Definitely. Yeah. More because it's the average Joe. We know we still are so average. People think, you know, because you've got a few followers, you're some superhuman, but we're just so average. Mm. And I think that's, you know, we come from wealth and, you know,
yeah,
like your dad that was rich or mum that was super rich and you were privileged as hell. I don't think we'd have the same comedy.
Yeah, you were born into that kind of life or whatever.
Yeah, but I think that's why.
And I think it also, like, working in that industry also taught us, like, work ethic.
Yeah,
like
100%.
And what we know we don't want to do. So, like, that's why we work so hard towards this, because we know we don't, done that. We don't want that. This is what we want. So it makes us work a bit harder.
For sure. I think that was the drive, because we knew we were getting to the age where, you know, you got to kind of find a career or chase something down that you really love. And knowing how much I personally didn't like the job site, like, I could not handle it. I just do it to save money to travel. But when I was, if I had to settle down, I could not physically go every day. So I think that drive helped us so much, especially when we started getting a bit of traction. We're like, let's go for this heavily.
You guys touched on that Europe trip earlier that you finally decided to go on. Thank goodness you did, because that was when the Inspired Unemployed was born. Like, you guys have been making skit videos, but it wasn't until you were trapped. Was it in a shitty French hostel or Airbnb that you guys were snowed in? You didn't have access to Wi-Fi. You had to entertain yourselves, and to entertain yourselves, you started making the Inspired Unemployed videos. Was that when you first had a video go viral? Like, when was the moment that you guys kind of looked at each other and thought, we're onto something here and it's going to work?
When we're stuck in that shitty Airbnb in France, that was when we kind of got to the realization that we're going to try and do videos, and we're going to try and do them as hard as we can. We left summer at home, all our mates at home, went over to France and just got snowed in. It was dark. It wasn't a very good start to the trip. Our car was breaking down. It was just everything that could go wrong went wrong, and then we're stuck in this shitty Airbnb paying like 100 euros a night. And we sat down and we're like, we got to like figure out right here now what we're going to do. And like, let's try and make some videos. Also because we're bored and having fun. And we're like, let's do it. Let's make some videos and punch them out and see how it goes.
I think we had goals. Like, we sound heaps nerdy, but we go to the cafe and like write our book, like goals or how many videos we want to do, you know, in the next month or whatever, and just go hard at it. I feel like we're in Europe. I feel like we're working. Like, we were putting out a lot of content. We're putting out probably 4 videos a week, which is hard way trying to have a holiday and edit at the same time as film. But, yeah, from that Airbnb, coming from summer in Australia to over there, and the trip started off so bad. We bought this car in the middle of nowhere in England, the dodgiest, like, before we're going to get bashed.
Honestly, when we bought it, there was glass all throughout the front. Like, it must have, they would have stole it. I think they stole the car.
It was a stolen
vehicle. Registration papers, and it was, like, so sus. We're going to the post office to get it all sorted, and they're like, you're missing this and that. And we're like, oh my God, we just bought this dud.
We didn't even register. I don't think we registered.
Oh my God.
Then we drove into France, got to France, can't speak French, got first day there. The car broke down, but it would still go, but it was going like 40 kilometers on this insanely fast motorway.
Whatever they call it in
Germany.
They can just go as fast as they want.
Look, seriously, cars are going 180 km, like a jet past us, and we were off the lane going 40 kilometers, punching the steering wheel, or just crying.
He was throwing his phone like in the back of the car, going, this is fucked. And, and we were trying to make it to France.
To Paris
to get to this Airbnb on time.
Oh man.
And we didn't have phone reception.
And he was driving. He's the most stressful driver ever. Like he's getting his L's.
And then we get to the outskirts of Paris. It's like driving in Bali. It was just like people going everywhere.
Sketchy.
It starts snowing. There's no back window because it's like one of those vans that's fully shut off. And then the mirror is smashed on that side and I have one mirror to go off. And it's nighttime, it's snowing, there's people going everywhere.
People like bonfires in the middle of the road, I'm not joking. Like,
and that was like the lowest point of my life. I was like, never. I was in this car and I just wanted to be at home, asleep, like cuddling my mum or some shit. And I was driving this car, nearly in tears.
And we had to fix the car in the morning, and the Airbnb lady messages and she goes, guys, you're too late, I can't check you in. And then I was heaps sick. I had like this crazy cold. I was getting vertigo. I remember standing in McDonald's, like thinking I was on a boat. And Falcon was just looking at the ground, like crying.
I don't know how we survived, but yeah. Jesus.
So that was the start of the trip. But then it got a bit better from there.
Yeah.
So that was the start of the trip and you would make these videos. And when you say like you had these goals, I think this is the stuff that I actually really enjoy hearing, even though you kind of joked it was a bit nerdy, because like it's not like you throw something at a wall and hope it sticks. Like there is thought and process behind this stuff. What did you want? Like when you were sitting there having conversations about making these videos, what did you want out of them?
I think we almost wanted it to be a resume for us to get into the industry, like entertainment, to put a backlog of, well, I don't know. First, we were doing it for us because we loved it. But second, yeah, it was for that, for just to do.
Yeah.
We wanted just to see how far we could go with it and see how much traction we could get. But we didn't know that was going to take off like that. We honestly thought if we had 20,000 followers in 2 years, that'd be so cool. We were looking at people with 50,000 followers saying, and we were like, how the hell, how the hell could they do that? Like, it's crazy. Blah, blah, blah. And we didn't even, really in Europe for 6 months, doing about 4 videos a week on average. We only got to 8,000 followers, I think, before we got home. And then we were getting pretty tired at that point, hey?
Mm.
And he was still over there for another month, and I got home. And we're still making a couple of videos, but then when he got home, we're like, let's go for it. And then after that, literally the first 3 videos took off, like went from 8,000 to 35 in a couple of days.
Mm. Yeah, it's kind of like more like a resume to, I don't know, like get extra gigs or just get us into that industry. We didn't know exactly what we wanted to do because I don't think anyone knows what we want to do. And then, so we just thought, try and get this as a resume and then hopefully it might lead to something. And
we definitely didn't look at it as a job at all. Like, we were still trying to think of business ideas while this is all happening.
Yeah.
It was so far from our mind that this could ever make you money, especially in a short amount of time.
Talk to us about that really awkward early stage, because when we made Shameless, we went through the exact same thing that we built Shameless to be part of our resume. We thought we wouldn't be hired in the industry unless we could kind of upskill and be in podcasting and stuff as well. And one thing I remember really thinking in the early days was, God, this is uncomfortable and it's awkward, because Shameless wasn't a thing yet. People didn't really recognize it yet. And when you're just kind of like putting out content, there's a lot of raised eyebrows, like trying to explain what you're doing to your grandparents or your parents. They all get like very confused and a little bit worried about you as well. Yeah. What do you remember of those really uncomfortable early days before the Inspired Unemployed was successful?
I think it was pretty easy. Yeah, it was lucky for us because we're overseas, so we can make the most shameful videos, and then we didn't have to go face to face with anyone like in IGA or
the next day.
Yeah, on the job site.
Worse. Oh my God, putting yourself out there that hard, having no, like 1,000 followers, people don't back you like they would now. Because now it's legit, but back then you're probably doing the same things, and everyone's not laughing at it, but it's just scary.
Yeah. So the hardest part was done before we got home. So we shamed ourselves and we weren't at home, so we didn't have anyone to really give a shit or whatever.
We're in our own world, pretty much. It's like a little Disneyland. where we didn't have, we put out a bad video. Honestly, some of the videos we did over there, I could not have come home. I would have went and lived in Antarctica before I went home to to face people that I know because they were so heavy.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is.
But it is awkward to start.
It's scary.
Because you put yourself out there, you don't know if it's good or not. And yeah, you kind of just got to, and it's not good at the start. Yeah. You're pretty hopeless and you just got to push through, I guess.
Yeah. And people, you know, don't. A lot of people haven't seen that side of you. Like they see you on the job site, you chat, having, you know, very sophisticated conversations to like people on at work, and then next thing you're dancing in a Barbie outfit, like, you know. So it's pretty scary. But I mean, I think we came to a point where me personally, anyway, I was just like, who cares? Like, who cares what anyone thinks? Let's just do us. Yeah.
After you did so many shameful kind of videos, everyone, I don't really care now. They've seen me. They've seen enough.
Coming up after the break, how Vogue editor Edwina McCann helped make the inspired unemployed serious players in the fashion industry. But first, a word from today's sponsor. I heard a quote that you told Channel 9 recently where you said, we were putting so much time into it prior to it blowing up, which was the hardest bit because you'd think, is this worth it, putting all our time into it? I want to know what those kind of shaky moments like. Like you even said before, there were moments where you just got a bit tired of it. Were there moments where you thought, gah, I don't know if we're going to do this, or did you put a timeline on how long you were going to do it for until you kind of pulled back if it didn't hit a certain target?
At the end of our Europe trip, Jack went home like a month earlier than me, and just before, like 3 weeks before he was going home, or maybe 2 weeks, we wanted to try and like make a few videos so when we weren't together, we could still distribute them. And then, I don't know, we kind of just, it wasn't really growing that much, and we were kind of putting all this effort into it, and we're on holidays and we're with our friends at that point. And, yeah, you know, we're kind of on a holiday, and then we're trying to take time away to go, me and him, film something. And I felt bad to our friends over there.
Because it wasn't legit either.
Yeah, it wasn't legit. It's like, what are we doing this for? And no one even really cares about it at all. So that was the point where it was a bit, yeah, it got a bit.
Yeah. But then, yeah, exactly. That was the closest we've ever had to, I don't think we'd ever would have stopped doing it, but that was the closest we've ever had to be like, fuck, is it worth it? Like, we're putting so much work in. But then when you got home,
we probably needed that like a month away from each other.
Yeah.
You know, literally sleeping with each other every night.
No, not like that. Not like that, but like, we're in bunk beds like the whole time, sleeping in the back of a van.
And in double beds.
So yeah, we're just sleeping, exactly, in bunk beds, in our van.
Yeah.
So we probably needed a little break.
And then, you know how it's like getting philosophical? It's having a word. What am I saying here?
Sounds good to me.
you know, getting deep. But how they say when you're so close to success, you think you're about to quit? Or whatever
when
that quote is.
When you're closest to success, yeah, it's when you're...
When you're closest to giving up.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is honestly, I don't think we would have gave up, but we were so close to like, fuck, it's growing so slow, it's so much work. And then after that, we pushed through and it just went gangbusters. It's crazy. And it was all worth it.
I love so much talking to other friends who have gone into business together because it's a pretty rare thing to do, and it's something Zara and I have obviously done as well. And one thing we've really found interesting over the last 2 to 3 years we've done Shameless is like keeping the friendship as one thing and then having a business relationship as well together and trying to make sure those two things are separate and that you still kind of like spend time as friends and then spend time as business partners and don't just let it all bleed into the other. How do you guys go with that though? Because it's not very easy all the time to work with someone you're closest to than anyone else in the world.
I don't think we have that. I think ours is one big relationship.
Yeah.
I don't think we have like a business relationship and a friend relationship. I think it's just one thing.
One could be combined.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird. There's probably not many people I can do it with at all. But it works. I don't know. I think we're just together that much. We know what each other, we know what we're thinking. Mm-hmm. I literally know what he's thinking. He knows what I'm thinking. And we agree on pretty much everything. And if we disagree, it kind of makes you step back and be like, okay, he's probably right, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the business to personal life, like, it's kind of just exciting for us. We don't really get it's not like a turn off. It's just, it's kind of like a game for us. How well you can do, I don't know.
Yeah, we just have kind of fun with it. We try not to take it too seriously. I mean, we want to make something out of it, but with all like the deals and that, we kind of just, I don't know.
Yeah, just have fun.
Whatever.
like it works out. It's good. It's pretty funny. Like,
you'd sit in rooms. We sit in rooms with people so high up. We got thongs on and shorts, and they're in like boots, and we're just kicking each other under the table, laughing like, "What is happening right now?" It's that funny, but at the same time, we take it very seriously.
Yeah, for any brands listening, we are very serious about this.
Contradicting myself.
I was really surprised. I asked you this before we actually started recording because I had been wondering as we were prepping for this interview whether you live together, because obviously you film all your stuff together. And I was like, I wonder if they live together. And it turns out you do. How do you do that? Like, do you live with other people? Are you always talking about content? Like, I know Mish asked about whether there was a line, but what's it like in the house?
Yeah. So we live, there's five of us in the house. Well, there was, we just moved out. So it's soon going to be three of us.
Three of us, two and Dom.
Yeah, but usually the past year it's been five of us. So there's always, like, you can always break off. If we get sick of each other, you can go hang out with someone else. Or even when you're just in a big group atmosphere, it's not like you're one-on-one.
And when we're in a group, it's kind of like that's our break. That's our time away. We never talk about business when we're with the boys because, firstly, they don't care and we just need a break, yeah. But when we're together, it's just everything combined. But when we're the boys, that's our time apart for sure. We never really talk about business at all in front of the guys, just because we don't want to. It's kind of nice to have that break.
And I think when we living together helps, because even at like 9 o'clock at night, we'll come up with an idea and we just like bounce off each other. Or sometimes we're editing and I'll give it to you and you edit it a bit and back and forth. So it kind of works living together. But I guess if we can just maintain handle on each other, it's good. But
we're saying the other day, it's pretty funny, we'll probably be living within 10 kilometers of each other for the rest of our life, maybe. It's a good possibility. It's hard to get a farm, like split it down the middle.
Yeah,
like we can't really be apart because it just won't work. Just get Zoom calls going.
Well, it basically becomes like a marriage. Like Zara and I joke all the time that we are basically as connected at the hip as any marriage is now that we share a bank account and all this other stuff as well. I want to know how you come up with ideas. Like, it's one thing to kind of have it as a hobby and come up with videos whenever they come to mind, but it's another thing to then have your job be making videos and your job be coming up with ideas. How do you guys come up with stuff for skits or for videos, and is one of you more the ideas guy than the other?
We're in that process right now, writing skits. It's literally, would you agree, it's 50-50.
Yeah.
Like everything.
Everything from like editing to video ideas to like business. You were heaps more business savvy at the start, but then now I feel like you've taught me to be when we're doing deals and whatever. So I feel like we're honestly like really 50-50 with everything.
Yeah, it depends. Like, wherever you're, I could be looking out the window right now and see a girl on a bike doing, I don't know. And then I could be like, yeah, that's an idea. And that's my skit. So I will write it and then I'll show Falcon or tell Falcon. And then he can put his 2 cents on that. And then that's how it works all the time. That's just what it is. Like, someone always has the idea and then you're like, oh my God, that's amazing. Let's do this, that. Finesse the script a bit. And then just once the script's done, you just improv the rest. It's not too heavily scripted at all. We just kind of 60-70% script and go off the rest. But 50-50, everything, editing. We're so fortunate we have each other, like you guys are probably as well, that especially for editing, for everything actually, filming, because we film everything ourselves and edit everything ourselves. So editing, you can get so much tunnel vision that you don't even know what you're looking at. Then the other person will come in, within 10 minutes, they'll fix the whole thing up so fast. So I couldn't imagine how hard it would be for people doing it by themselves.
And just having someone to bounce off ideas makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
For sure.
No, for sure. I think it's one of those things we often joke that it feels a bit like a cheater's way to do work and content and business, because you do always have like a fallback person to kind of bounce off. What video do you guys credit for that takeoff period? I mean, you said before that saying that just before success is often the time you're most likely to kind of give up. Talk to us about that kind of really quick extreme growth, and what do you credit to it?
It was three videos, but it was probably one main video, the Berlin dancing one when we're all in the black at the quarry. That would have been the one.
Yeah.
I think Brandon Cardigan shared that, and then it just went nuts from a lot of people sharing, actually. People everywhere around Australia and the world. That was the one for sure.
And we haven't done much dancing videos. The Hall & Oates one, like dancing down the street, and that went off. So we're like,
the dancing's like, yeah, people like that. So then the next dancing one was the Berlin one, yeah, and then it kind of just like those two videos kind of, yeah, made it explode a bit more.
And we're lucky, very lucky that we had, we put in though that time in Europe, because we had it, by the time we did blow up, we had about 100 and something videos. So that would have helped so much. Because, you know, when you go on someone's page, if they got one video, you're like, well, what's the point of following them? That we had a whole backlog, which they weren't that good, but it would have helped so much with, you know, getting some traction, getting some followers.
What about moving into the world of fashion? Like, I'm sure this is as surprising to you guys as it is to anyone. You are now working, or you have worked with the likes of Fendi, GQ, and Vogue. One of you actually said in an interview lately that you didn't know what Fendi was when they reached out to you and wanted to collaborate. What do you think that's about? Like, where did the fashion stuff come into play?
I wish we knew how to tell you.
It all started because Edwina McCann from, she's the editor-in-chief of Vogue and GQ, emailed us, wanted to meet us because she liked the videos, and we're just lucky she liked the videos. You know, when just a lucky person that likes the videos, and she met us, and then she took us to the GQ Man of the Year Awards, and then we got in Vogue.
Well, how we got in Vogue was actually, that's probably what would have started most of it.
Yeah,
that was the most random thing ever.
Definitely.
We were, this girl, Jessica Roscoe, she's a photographer, she's great, we didn't really know her. And she just hit us up when to do just a random photo shoot, like a 2-day shoot, just down our way.
And it was
like,
for nothing. It was nothing. Just for fun.
Just for fun. And we're like, yeah, sweet, let's do it. And then on the second day, we're shooting.
No, it was on the first day.
It was on the first day.
Afternoon.
The sunset.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sunset. And we're shooting. And we said, I'm not even kidding, we're like, imagine if these got in Vogue. And then when we went back to the car to pack all our stuff up, we had an email from Edwina, which is the editor-in-chief of Vogue. Never heard of her in our life. And that happened literally half an hour after we said that. Then when we went to the meeting with Edwina that had nothing to do with the photo shoot, we were with like all her assistants and stuff. And we showed the photos that we took on the day to these girls. And then they said, holy shit, Edwina needs to see these. And as we're walking back to the car, because Edwina was in a meeting, we had a DM off Edwina in capital saying, oh my God, these are amazing. We're going to print. She's like, don't send these to anyone. And we were like, we were screaming, like running around the street, like jumping up and down. It was that funny.
Yeah, because it was actually meant to get to another publication. She's like, don't send these to everyone. We want to print them in Vogue. And then I guess that's kind of like kicked
off.
That
was the start.
But that didn't like...
that was not until February.
Yeah, so we did that in like November, but the print didn't go until February. But then I think because they seen us like joking around modeling and stuff, she's like, all right. And then she got us the Fendi gig with GQ.
Yeah.
The Fendi GQ photo shoot, and then I think that just kind of exploded. And it's funny because the first ever photo shoot we done ended up in Vogue, and then the second photo shoot we ever did ended up in GQ.
Yeah.
And we're just like, wow,
that's such an annoying fact. Like,
so bizarre because we don't, I've never even read a mag in my life, didn't even know what Fendi was when we got the phone call. But I guess it's because we're so opposite of fashion that maybe they were trying to hit that target, or we were just, it was just good play. Right, good timing.
I think the whole fashion industry at the moment is trying to take it less serious.
Yeah.
I think that's the vibe of it. So we just got lucky and they use us as the puppets to do it.
Well, I was going to say, what do you think Edwina McCann saw in you? Like, have you asked her since, or the more time that you've spent in the fashion industry, have you kind of understood why it was you guys that she pegged, you know, back in November as the men who would probably, you know, change the kind of pace of men's fashion in Australia this year?
I think it's the chiseled jawline and like six pack. that one has happened a lot. I have no idea, honestly. I guess the comedy, and she was just literally loved us so much. She brought her kid to come and meet us and stuff. And we weren't that big at the time at all. I don't know. I think the what we're doing, comedy messed with a bit of mixed with a bit of fashion. She could saw, and she took a gamble, and thankfully she took that gamble. It was a pretty bold move of her.
Yeah.
Of like on her behalf, we weren't big at all, and we. And she put us up with Fendi straight away to do it.
Yeah.
You know, she had to call him over in Italy, and she's like, these guys need to do this cover, blah, blah, blah. And we couldn't work out why she did that. But, yeah, just lucky, honestly.
You guys spoke to the Daily Talk Show at the very beginning of this year, and in that chat you spoke to them about how you've always been wary or cautious of selling out, and you think it's really important for branded deals to be like specific and to not take every offer coming your way. I imagine that must have been kind of hard though at times. Like if you've got these huge, potentially really well-paid opportunities coming into your inbox all the time and all these brands want to work with you, how do you guys internally decide which brands you'll say yes and no to?
At the start, it was hard to say no because you...
So new to it.
You're like, oh my God, they want to pay us this to do this. This is the dream. And then I think as we go on now, like no matter how much someone offered us money, we're easy to say no. Like even if someone... offered millions, like honestly, we can.
What about you?
And it's, I don't know, for some reason it's just so easy to say no now because
honestly,
we know that if we say no to that,
it's long term.
Yeah, long term, like in a couple of months we might get offered something better.
Yeah. If a gambling, you know, company, which has actually hit us up and we did it, if you did that stuff for 4 months, in 6 months no one cares about you at all. Like, you've just sold out, you've lost your touch. So I guess that balance is super hard. But I think now, I can get 20 emails a day and our manager probably gets more. But we just say no to pretty much everything unless it really, we love it. Like we love the idea that it could work for us or it just aligns with, we could take the piss out of it pretty much. That's when we'll do it, I think.
Yeah.
Always fashion, high fashion.
Is creative control important too? I mean, the recent campaign that you did with The Iconic was, this is a non-sponsored shout out, but genuinely one of the most incredible branded ads I've ever sent.
She won't stop talking about it. She will not stop talking about it.
I sent it to Michelle and I was like, this is incredible. Like, this is insane. Is having some kind of control over the content or what it's going to look like really important?
Yep. 100%. Everything, really.
Yeah.
We're very particular now with
creative
control. We won't do branded stuff unless we have creative control. But in that case, it was such a big production. But we were there from the start. Yeah, so we were from the start, like we kind of helped brought out the whole campaign. But then on the day, there's directors and director wrote all the shots. Just and
I've been a good team. Yeah. The team, like the director, Stefan, and then all the producers and stuff, they were legends. And it wasn't that case. We would have knew that before we kicked off with it because you have Zooms and stuff. So we definitely, you wouldn't go ahead with it if you felt.
We were feeling it.
Yeah, like you were kind of prisoned about it. But then the editing's such a big part. Because it's how you can get the humor across for us. And we edited the Iconic one. But, I don't know. I think creative control we need.
Mm.
Otherwise, you just feel it's just weird. Yeah. Someone doing your own content, like, I don't think that could ever happen. Unless it's a TV show or something.
I mean, I think you guys being so selective with your own brand is like crucial to its success and why it's taken off so much. And I think over this year in particular, your profiles, both personally and as the Inspired Unemployed, have just skyrocketed. How do you feel about that? How do you feel maybe about being recognized on the street or having a weird level of like internet fame but also quite legitimate fame now?
It's pretty bizarre.
So bizarre.
It's funny. You
can't wrap your head around it.
Yeah.
I mean, even you walk down the road and you're getting photos. I don't know. You can't process it. It just is happening and you're just enjoying it. Besides when you're hungover, I can't talk to people. And if people come up for photos, I'm literally, I put my bucket hat on with my speed dealer sunnies. I can't do it. Yeah. If we walk together, we're kind of screwed. But if we're separate, we're fine, like in groups. But if we're together, we're the biggest target.
But it always is people coming out like being so nice. And like, oh, love your stuff. So it's nice. It is. But then there's the times when you're hungover and you want to go down and you just want to get your, so I don't know, shopping or get your snitty and then you don't really want to talk a whole lot. But everyone's always so nice.
Better than
it is. It is pretty cool.
It's amazing. Like the thing, everyone comes up to us is so nice. That's the best thing. That's the 100% the beauty of it because they have something good to say always and they're frothing. They're not coming up ripping on us.
Hopefully that doesn't come.
Yeah, too soon. Near future. Yeah.
Right.
Casino ad.
Yeah, and it's cool to see like some people when they're just so stoked and like you just have a conversation with them and seeing them so stoked. It's pretty cool.
As two guys who have achieved a bunch of like conventional success in the space of a couple of years, how do you define success? Because we do ask everybody about success, but I am particularly intrigued with your answer given, you know, what the last year and a half has looked like.
I think doing something you genuinely love because that's so much easier said than done. Like, we got very lucky with timing, but we genuinely love it. I think if you're doing something you love and it doesn't feel like you're working and you're just happy, that's success for sure. yeah. in my eyes.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, you could be rich as hell and happy, or rich as hell and miserable. But if you're rich and hell and miserable, that's not success. You're just wealthy with a big lonely house.
Mm.
But or you could be poor as hell and absolutely stoked because that's just what you like. But I think for us, for me anyway, it's just doing what you're doing this, and every day is the funnest day of our life. We try and live every day like it's our last day.
Yeah. That's why I never wanted to do the apprenticeship in that. I've always kind of, the whole time, we've both shared very similar, like we're pretty like dreamers. Like before this all started, we shared the same kind of mindset where we wanted to like live the best life we can. Like I've always wanted to just live the best life I can. That's why I did the surf shop job, because I could have heaps of holidays and go to every festival and that. And then I've always just wanted to have the best life possible. And then
you can do it.
Yeah.
But at the time, when life starts getting serious and you're not, you know, you are thinking you might be a tradie forever, you kind of stop believing that, because especially down our way, there's not too many people chasing big dreams. So you kind of get stuck in a bit of a rut of like, fuck, maybe I do need to knuckle in and get that house and retire when I'm 60 and I can barely walk and all that stuff, you know?
So you're just trying to have as much fun each day.
Yeah. That's success. Having fun.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that so much, and I think our listeners will too. Boys, thank you so much for coming on the show. You guys are a hot commodity right now, so we are very, very grateful you gave us 45 minutes of your time.
No worries.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for listening to this In Conversation episode of Shameless with the Inspired Unemployed. If you're wanting more from the boys, you can, of course, follow them on Instagram if you're not already, at The Inspired Unemployed. If you enjoyed this chat, we also recommend you listen to our other In Conversation episodes with Andy Lee and Hamish Blake. We will pop the links to both of those chats in our show notes. As for us, the best way to support the show is click follow on Spotify or subscribe on Apple, or recommend this episode to a friend. Thank you so much, guys. We will be back in your ears on Monday.